Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Let's talk about what happened in the debates. There's just a whole lot of fascinating information out there, and it was, you know, quite a 3 hours. First of all, the media story today is that Elizabeth Warren dodged the tax issue. This was the, you know, the entire last hour of morning. Well, I only watched about half of it, but what I saw on Joe Scarborough's show, what I saw over and over again, everybody, you know, Elizabeth Warren won't say she's going to raise taxes. She didn't dodge anything. She said, "I'm going to lower costs on middle-class families." This whole, "Oh, you're going to raise taxes," without saying, "Oh, and you're going to lower costs," is a pure Republican and health insurance industry talking point. And these idiots from the corporate media that call themselves news people, and they're actually TV stars making tens of millions of dollars a year as stars, and know that their multi-million dollar salary depends on their having conflict and getting ratings. These people are obsessed with trying to get this little soundbite out of Elizabeth Warren that the Republicans can turn into an ad. And, I mean, this is what happened back in the day. Walter Mondale said in the opening of the debate, actually, with him and Reagan, he said, "I'm going to raise your taxes, and so is Ronald Reagan. The difference is, he won't tell you the truth, and I just did." And that's what Mondale said. And the Republicans turned that into an ad, and they destroyed Mondale with it. And in fact, Reagan won every state except Mondale's home state of Minnesota in the 1984 election. And Elizabeth Warren, I mean, they're just begging Elizabeth Warren to give them that soundbite. And she's like, "Why would I do that? This is your frame, not my frame. I'm talking about costs. You know, what does it cost an American to have health insurance, essentially, to have a protection against getting sick? What does it cost an American? I'm going to reduce the costs for working people, average Americans, poor people, you know, working people, even upper middle income people. But the costs for very rich people, those costs are going to go up. And, you know, a large chunk of it's going to be taxes." But, you know, she is... The CNBC headline, "Warren dodges questions on middle-class tax hikes under Medicare for All." Right. See, I mean, it's like they're... And then she said, "I will not sign into law a bill that does not lower costs for middle-class families." Period. God bless her. She needs to keep saying it exactly the way she's saying it. She said, "My question is not why do Bernie and I support a wealth tax. It's why is it everybody else on this stage think it's more important to protect billionaires than it is to invest in an entire generation of Americans?"
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And could the answer to that question be because everybody else on the stage is taking money from billionaires? I don't know. Seems that way. The one thing that I do want to say, though, in asking you for your take, and I'm walking this line probably not as well as I should, but, you know, it's entirely possible that Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders will not be the nominee of our party. And we could end up with Joe Biden or Amy Klobuchar or Pete Buttigieg. I think pretty much anybody else is extremely unlikely. But, you know, it could be one of them. And I will work as hard as I can to get any of them elected. Even though I thought, you know, I didn't think Joe did himself any big favors last night. And I'm very concerned, that Donald Trump will eat his lunch in a debate. But, you know, maybe the Trump hate is so widespread in the United States that, it almost doesn't matter who our nominee is. But the bottom line is that, you know, in terms of winning against Trump, but that person is at the top of the ticket, which is going to bring along the Senate and the House and everything else and state houses. And, you know, so it's really important. But I think it's also important that none of us vilify or wound any of the Democratic challengers at this point, that we, you know, we can speak well of the ones that we like. We can specify our complaints of the ones that we have concerns about. But I think that characterizing any of them as not having integrity or as being sellouts or as being and I realize I've come close to this by saying they're taking money from Democrat from billionaires. And I'm going to pay close attention to that, too. But I'd like you to pay attention to that when you offer your opinions. Let's not leave blood on the floor, I guess, is the bottom line. A fascinating time. I first wanted to check in with Jefferson Smith, the guy who fills in for me from time to time here. He is the owner and has his own show on X-Ray FM, the local Portland affiliate for our program. And also, he's a former state legislator here in Oregon, knows politics inside out, was the co-founder of the Bus Project, probably one of the most successful progressive activist programs in the Pacific Northwest, I'd say maybe in the country. It's become the model for a lot of others. Jefferson, welcome back.
Hello, sir. It's great to hear your voice. It's great to be on the air together. And I came with the answer.
Okay, you're the spreadsheet guy. So you've been figuring out what's going
answer.
On. Okay, what's the first? What's the question?
The question is, who won the debate?
Okay,
and I have the answer.
All right.
And to be clear, for purposes of this exercise, I have no viewpoint of my own. Only an amalgamation of the purportedly educated viewpoints of others.
Now, for purposes of presentation. I'm sure you have your own opinion.
Yes, exactly. Just for this exercise. I do. I have my own, many opinions. But I'll take my tongue out of my cheek for a moment.
Okay.
As I think about debates, and I think about how debates sort of impact me, how I evaluate them, I recognize how much we're all impacted largely by our own preferences and biases. Right, explicitly and implicitly. If a candidate says something about wealth disparities or climate change or democracy and voting rights, I might nod my head vigorously. If a centrist says something to whack Elizabeth Warren, a centrist might nod their head vigorously. And those nods inform our overall view. It also occurred to me that in evaluating how the debate impacts the race, my own view is also limited in its value because so much of figuring out the impact of a debate on a race is what the pundits, in fact, say. So starting this year, what I started doing, and I got nerdy about it, is I started making a spreadsheet for each of the Democratic primary debates and cataloging. I would take 10, so this is sort of the methodology. I would take 10 leading news outlets. There's a lot of overlap, but sometimes I use different ones based on how quickly they publish. I try to take those that seem pretty credible and actually write pretty good stuff on it. And then I catalog what they say are the winners and losers. And I then give a sort of a little special comparison with the New York Times, who does their own average of their 10 of their writers. Mm-hmm. So does that methodology make sense? Have I lost everybody so far? Have I already?
Yeah, no.
So
let's get right to it. Who won and who lost?
All right.
According to the media pundits, basically.
Yes, this is the pundit review. You want to hear losers first or winners first?
I opt to you.
All right. So I'll do the mild losers. And my definition of mild loser is the folks who kind of came in the middle. And the reason I call them a mild loser is because at this point, as the race heats up, if you don't do anything really, then one could say it's not helpful to your campaign.
By mild loser, do you mean that these are the moderates who were losers, or these are people who moderately lost?
Moderately lost. Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you.
So these folks, Andrew Yang and Cory Booker, got just over, were almost mild winners, but the Kamala Harris and Castro came just mild losers, barely just under an average, so pretty close to neutral.
Okay.
All right, so those are people pretty much in the middle.
So they basically didn't change as a consequence of the debate last night, in all probability.
That would be
according to the media pundits. Yeah.
According to media pundits, and I should say, I'll say it really quickly, the folks that I looked at New York Times, Vox, CNN, USA Today, The Independent, Washington Post, Business Insider, BBC, Alternate, and I included Red State this time, my first time including them.
Okay.
And interesting, their analysis wasn't way out of whack with, wasn't way out of step with other folks.
Yeah.
The biggest losers were, Beto O'Rourke and Biden did pretty badly, according to the pundits. Most of the folks on Biden said, well, it's not that he did so badly. He just didn't look like the guy who could win the presidential race.
Right.
And then the people who average, and on the New York Times average, got a 2.5 and a 2.6, respectively, out of 10. So the two biggest losers for the New York Times, pretty similar to the Dallas I ended up doing, were Tulsi Gabbard and Tom Steyer.
Right.
Tulsi Gabbard, according to my average, did actually a little bit better than Beto O'Rourke and Biden. But for the New York Times, but still was in my bottom four. And for the New York Times,
I don't think either one of them made a compelling argument for themselves. And neither one of them successfully took a bite out of somebody else's leg.
Exactly. So then, I would agree with that. Now, here are the folks who are sort of the winners. Now, Booker and Klobuchar for the New York Times, they had them in the top five. Klobuchar came third or fourth, essentially fourth in my analysis. And so I would call her sort of a mild winner. And
she's the one who's going to jump in if Joe falls. I think that's how she's positioning herself. I think Buttigieg is doing the same thing.
Exactly. That was an argument several pundits made about both Klobuchar and Buttigieg. They're just sort of waiting to pick up the scraps of a Biden dropout or a Biden drop off if such a thing happens. And then the three biggest winners were Bernie Sanders, Buttigieg, and Warren, according to the now analysis. I have a couple of some of what I like analyzing actually is the media, right? My own thoughts about the debate, but I find a couple of media dynamics interesting that if time bears, I want to offer that thought. But how does that comport with your view, Tom? How did you, where does that seem out of whack or jibe with what you saw?
I think that that's probably a reasonable analysis, and it's not inconsistent with what I saw. I was expecting, frankly, since you were deriving all this in the media, that there would be a little more, quote, media bias in there. I'm just waiting for them. I mean, I just remember so vividly back in, I think it was 2004, that, Howard Dean was on Chris Matthews' show, and Chris Matthews said, well, you've talked about these big corporations being broken up. You're here on MSNBC. We're owned by General Electric. This was at the time. He says, do you think that we should be broken up? And Howard Dean said, yes, absolutely. And he said, wait a minute, you mean MSNBC and NBC should be split off from GE? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. A media company should be a media company, and they should compete in the media field. And Chris Matthews looked just genuinely stunned. And that was, I think, 4 days before the so-called Dean scream, which we all now know in retrospect
was
literally the media taking down Howard Dean, destroying him, just wiping him off the face of the earth. And because Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are both saying essentially the same thing, I've been waiting for the Dean scream that's going to hit one of them. And, I'm guessing it'll probably come when the moderate part of the, you know, the, I mean, last night Joe Biden really blew it a couple of times. He confused his two sons. He said that his son Hunter had the job of AG in Delaware, which was his son Beau. He confused Iraq and Afghanistan in one answer, and he just patronized Elizabeth Warren, trying to take credit for her single biggest accomplishment. And now the fact checkers are out here saying he had nothing to do with this. He wasn't even around to get this thing passed, and he was trying to claim credit for it last night. It was so, you know, kind of mansplainy, patronizing, you know, and he was interrupting her and shouting over her and stuff. I think all that's going to hurt him in the long term. And so, you know, I think that once the media figures out who is a media acceptable candidate who can actually win, and they're increasingly thinking that's not going to be Joe Biden, and I'm guessing they're going to try to, they're probably going to try to end up with Amy Klobuchar, particularly the way she was given, the kind of treatment she was given when she first announced on MSNBC, where she was just everywhere all the time, over and over and over again. When she starts climbing in the polls and becoming the corporate Democrat standard bearer against the Bernie Sanders side, that's when the Dean scream for Warren, Warren Sanders, that's when the Dean scream for Warren or for Sanders, whoever's ahead at that point. Right now it's looking like it's going to be Warren. That's when I think they're going to roll that out. Now, that's a prediction.
I worry about the same thing. And one possible route that is building is how they're now starting the debate with trying to get Elizabeth Warren to say, I want to raise taxes, trying to put it in her box,
right,
that will either impact her in the primary, impact her in the general, when she's given her answer, she's given it a bunch of times, and saying that basically thinking about it as taxation, as a construct, think about it as total cost. She's given that answer. They're going to keep going after about that. Your thought on Biden comports with one of the pundits, Mimi Swartz, who was the most positive about Biden, gave him a 7 out of 10. Most positive about Biden I could find, and even this was damning with faint praise. He stayed in the game until the fourth quarter for the first time with no record player references. Yeah. Fielded Hunter questions well enough, but his last stab at Warren, and here's where Mimi agrees with you, at Warren translated on screen as, listen here, little lady. Here is my take on the media, something I've noticed, that there tends to be in the pundit review a reward for being conflict oriented, for being a little mean, for going after somebody. I saw it when Castro did his thing early on. I saw it when the whole country saw it when Kamala Harris went after Biden. But what I've noticed, I think there is some media bias, not only media bias about their own media ownership, but also media bias around the fact that they're fight promoters, that conflict mm-hmm. gets ratings, that fights are what they like to see. And so when Kamala Harris says, you know, the things she said, she gets a bump. But over time, I don't know if every voter likes it. And Klobuchar right. and Buttigieg both got higher marks in this methodology, in significant part, when I did the reading, because they went hard after Warren. I don't know if that helps them with overall Democratic voters over time,
I think not. Yesterday, my Facebook, we do a daily Facebook meme. Actually, I think it might be today's, but it was my rant yesterday. Was in 1988, the League of Women Voters was supposed to moderate that election. And the two parties that year, the previous year, 87, put together this corporation to supervise the election, the primaries. And the League of Women Voters said, this is a sham. We will not participate in this sham. We are out of here. And I think it's time to shut down that corporation and bring the League of Women Voters back in and have questions asked. AT&T owns CNN. AT&T has got huge interests in China. Not a single question about what's going on in Hong Kong. Not a single question about, you know, corporate influence and corporate power. Yet these are some of the biggest issues
rights.
Of our time. Or voting rights, yeah. Absolutely, so much was missed. Yeah, Jefferson Smith. Jefferson, thanks so much for being with us.
Appreciate it, Tom. Let's do it again.
The website, xray.fm. As a believer in natural medicine, I'm one to shy away from surgery, especially cosmetic procedures. And let's face it, you know, I'm human and want to look good. And decades of hard work and long life have left its mark. And I found a product that not only works but meets my non-invasive criteria. It's called Plexiderm. It's derived from shale rock and visibly reduces under-eye bags, wrinkles, and crow's feet in minutes. No knives, no needles, only naturally derived ingredients. Don't believe it? I didn't either until I tried, and now I don't let my skin give away my age. Within minutes, I was looking like my younger self again. Best part is Plexiderm goes on clear, so nobody will know you're using it unless you tell them, and the effects can last for hours. Go to TryPlexiderm.com and use my code TOM, T-H-O-M, for 50% off plus an additional $10 off. That's right, 50% off plus an extra $10 off. Plexiderm is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Don't be a victim of your skin any longer. Visit TryPlexiderm and use the code TOM, T-H-O-M, at checkout. That's TryPlexiderm.com or call 800-685-1292. Oh, let's see here. Burl in Sierra Vista, Arizona. Hey, Burl, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi, Tom. You've been mentioning lately about how the debates are on the format with the reporters and such. And what came to mind was, if you remember a book by Dr. Eric Byrne called Games People Play.
Oh, yeah, that was back in the 80s or 70s even.
Yeah, at least. Anyway, one of the games he describes is called Let's You and Him Fight. And as that implies, it's a third person or third entity egging on the other two.
Right, the instigator.
To get them to fight. And it seems to me that's pretty much what's going on.
Yeah. Well, and as Jefferson pointed out, and as I was ranting about yesterday, these television networks are no longer obligated to provide news. They're not really in the business of providing news. They're in the business of making money via selling advertising, which means that ratings are the all-important thing. And the question that I think a lot of these newsrooms are asking before they're asking, what is the truth? What are the priorities? What are the things that could affect? I mean, just look at how climate change is being covered, right? I mean, this could literally affect the fate and future of the human race, much less civilization, much less the ability of democracy to survive in the United States. And it's virtually never discussed. You know, the crimes being committed against American consumers who are dying by the tens to hundreds of thousands every year as a consequence of the crimes committed by the pharmaceutical industry. Never discussed on television. They're the largest advertisers on television. You know, I'm totally with you, Bro.
Well, the way that, you know, what he points out is the only way you win a game like this is by refusing to play. And I think Cory Booker kind of alluded to that last night, but I think the others need to get on board with that as well.
Yeah, I've come to the conclusion that Cory Booker is running for vice president right now more than anything else. He is not making the kind of strong stands. You know, here's where I stand, you know, planting my flag kind of thing. I mean, you know, Buttigieg and Biden and Klobuchar are saying, you know, we're here with corporate health insurance. Corporate health insurance is a good partner. And the banks, they're good people. We can work with these people. Right. Those are the positions that they're taking. You know, Bernie and Elizabeth Warren are obviously saying those are terrible companies and we don't, you know, we want to regulate them or break them up or something. But Cory Booker and Julian Castro, I think both of them have been instead kind of just staying around the edges and in the middle and taking positions that could be nuanced in either direction, because I think that they're thinking that whether the presidential nominee ends up being you know, Biden, the centrist, which was what everybody was assuming 3 months ago, or whether it's going to be Warren or Sanders, a genuine progressive, that he could then end up going either way, or either one of them could end up, you know, throwing their lot in with either side and having some credibility to do that. My take is that they're running for vice president, but who knows?
Well, I'm very much a Bernie and Elizabeth fan. I've been for a long time. So.
Me too. I hope they make it through. Burl, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 22 minutes past the hour. You're watching or listening to your media support group for We the People of the United States of America, the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with more of my thoughts on last night's debate and your calls on soon. John in Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, John, what's up?
I watched that debate last night, and I'd at least give my 2 cents in on the public option in Medicare for All. I am a veteran, and I receive VA care, and I really feel for people out there.
So you're getting socialized medicine. I mean, that's literally socialized medicine. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, but I also have a job in which I have private insurance, but I choose not to use it because the VA gives me great, better coverage. What I don't understand about this debate between Medicare for All and the public option is, to me, it's real simple. Make Medicare the public option. I guarantee you, and like a previous caller said, if you put up the comparisons to what a person is paying in the private insurance to compare what they would be paying in Medicare, it's a no-brainer to me. It's sure. Just like the public option decision I made. Well, do I want to pay for my private insurance that my employer is giving me, or do I want to use the VA, which I pay for? No prescription drugs, no co-pays, no treatment. The only thing I'm paying for out of my insurance through my job is for dental. Mm-hmm. So I just want the public to understand. I used to work in the medical field. I used to do the billing. I understand what the people are going through. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I kind of felt that Buttigieg and those that are saying, well, how are you going to pay for it? I mean, what are you paying for now?
Right.
You're sitting here.
Exactly. Which is the point both Bernie and Elizabeth are constantly making, and
exactly.
Just needs to be made over and over and over again. Yeah. John, thank you very much for the call. Brian in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hey, Brian, what's up?
I just wanted to comment quickly that your comment about Booker running for vice president, I think, is right on if Elizabeth Warren is the candidate. And the other point on this debate about Elizabeth Warren explaining her position on Medicare for All, I wish she would take a page out of Jefferson Smith's comment where he said the proper construct is to view this as and not taxation, but total cost. She says that in a way, but I just thought it would be nice if she didn't start out with, yes, taxes are going to go up on corporations, et cetera, and just laser focused on, it's not the proper construct to talk about taxation.
Here's what she said. She said, I will not sign a bill into law that does not lower costs for middle class families. And then Klobuchar said taxing income is not going to get where you want to be the way taxing wealth does. Oh, I'm sorry. And then Warren said, the rich are not like you and me. The really, really billionaires are making their money off their accumulated wealth, and it just keeps going, growing. We need a wealth tax in order to make investments into the next generation. Well, that wasn't so much about Medicare for All stuff, but yeah.
The major point I wanted to make, Tom, is that I think that the old theme of keep your eyes on the prize, and I just wish that every one of the candidates would do a better job of pivoting toward Donald Trump is an existential threat on three different levels to us, to the country. First is the climate crisis, you know, his complete denial of that. Every one of those candidates should point that out. He's an existential threat on that basis. He's an existential threat to our form of government, our constitutional form of government, checks and balances, separation of powers. I mean, he's destroying that. And thirdly, he's an existential threat to the middle class.
Yeah. He's an existential threat to the fate and future of the planet through his global climate change denial, his pulling us out of the Paris Accords, to peace, to not having World War III, taking us out of the Iran nuclear deal, you know, what he just did in Syria. I mean, this guy is a serious danger to our
You're
country.
Listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And any of those people on that stage last night, any of them, and even a few who didn't make the stage, would make a much better president than Donald Trump. You know, I mentioned this thing with Facebook. I think that's important. Bernie Sanders just got key endorsements. This is a big deal. I've talked about how well I thought Elizabeth Warren did last night. Bernie Sanders did really, really well last night, too. He was upbeat. He was energetic. He was enthusiastic. He did not, you know, seem like anybody you'd have to worry about his health. And he today got official endorsements from three members of the squad, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar. So God bless them all. You know, the momentum continues. Until last year, I never endorsed a weight loss product, but I decided to change that after reading about university research into a molecule in olive oil that regulates appetite. Louise told me there was one that was worth sharing, and after a year, I'd have to say she's right. The key to losing weight, of course, is getting your appetite and those pesky food cravings under control. Once you do that, the rest is easy. My producer, Sean, is now trying Riduzone, too. Who doesn't want to lose a few pounds before the holidays? Sean says Riduzone is making it easy for her to stick with her weight loss plan. Just one capsule with breakfast, and that's it. Second one with dinner for days when you need a little extra help. Sean says when you don't feel hungry, it's easier to make better choices. The only ingredient in Riduzone occurs naturally in the body and is completely non-stimulant, and that really appealed to both Louise and Sean. Look, if you're looking to lose weight this season, I strongly suggest you give non-prescription Riduzone a try. Use the promo code TOM, T-H-O-M, and receive up to 65% off plus free shipping. Go to Riduzone.com. That's R-I-D-U-Z-O-N-E.com. R-I-D-U-Zone.com. Riduzone.com. Promo code TOM, T-H-O-M, Riduzone.com. Congressman Mark Pocan is with us.
Good morning, Tom.
It's great to have you with us. And I should mention, for people who might just be tuning in, you are the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. You represent the 2nd District of Wisconsin. Pocan.house.gov is your website. And you can be tweeted at Rep. Mark Pocan. I'm curious, before we get to our callers, there's already a few stacked up. What was your take on the debate last night?
The debate, one of the observations I had was, once again, progressive issues are taking the lead in what they're talking about. And I'm so happy to see Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders still kind of almost co-sharing that stage, talking about those issues. And we watched, you know, some people now to try to have new lanes to be that outsider. I think you've got, you know, Pete Buttigieg, and you have, to some degree, Amy Klobuchar trying to take that area because, you know, there's always room for an outsider as you start moving forward. But, you know, really watching, I think, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and talk about issues that are progressive issues that people really do care about, I think it was positive to see that continue to take the leading role in these debates.
Last night, Joe Biden mixed up Afghanistan and Iraq. He mixed up his two sons, said his son Hunter had been the AG, I guess it was, for Delaware, and that was his son Beau, who recently died. There's an interesting piece in the Financial Times. It wasn't so much covered by the American press. I mean, it was kind of largely ignored, that Klobuchar and Buttigieg are the ones figuring that if Joe continues to stumble like this, they'll be the ones who will step into that middle centrist place. What do you think?
Yeah, and even almost an outsider. You know, if you listen to Mayor Pete's answers last night when he talked about all those congressmen and senators, right, he was distancing himself from most everybody on the stage. And I think he's trying to find that role, as did, I think, Amy Klobuchar. Again, even though she's obviously an insider, trying to, if she's not doing well, then she can't be the preferred person, right, trying to take that kind of a position. But, you know, the fact that Medicare for All still is one of the leading issues they're talking about. And there in particular, I thought Bernie did a great job of, and we need to get this information out to folks, Tom, that when you have no deductible or no copay or anything else, think about right now how many people have 5,000 deductible annual plans. Right. That would be gone completely. That is something that has to be factored in as you talk about the economics of a single-payer system. And I think we need to share that because there's been some disinformation, I think, put out by the industry. And as you saw, there was an Intercept article, quite honestly, it was by the hospitals in the country who've been the leading funders of the disinformation.
Yeah, and then I was just disgusted this morning on Morning Joe as Claire McCaskill and Joe Scarborough were just like ripping apart, you know, Medicare for All and Bernie and Liz Warren. I mean, I just see the war starting. Stuart in Venice, Florida. Hey, Stuart, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, it's a pleasure to talk to both of you. Thanks for what you do. Very simple. Tom, yesterday you used the term low information voter, which is something we've been using for a long time. I want to get both your opinion on maybe starting to change it to misinformation voters or perhaps disinformation voters, because I think misinformation really nails it a lot better. I think that's the worst.
I was making the distinction between the people who are working so much that they might catch 10 minutes of news a day somewhere versus, which is the low information voters, versus the people who live in the Fox right-wing hate radio bubble, which is what you're describing. But Congressman, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, what Stewart's bringing up also is, I forget the exact percent, but it's an alarmingly high number of people who get their news from their Facebook feed.
Right.
And that's only giving you things from certain sources you go to anyway. So you're really not getting maybe the richness of what really is the news. And also you have a president who's telling you not to trust anything out there, but just trust him, as any good despot or dictator would do. And those voters are only getting that information, and I use that term with air quotes when I talk about Donald Trump, from him and him alone. So I think Stewart's point is well made, that you know, when you only get a narrow bit of news because it's from your Facebook feed or some other feed, or you're just getting it from someone who tells you they'll give you the truth and they alone will give you the truth, you can imagine how much misinformation people are getting.
Jack, listening to AM 910 in Folsom, California. Jack, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Thank you, Congressman. Gene McCarthy was my great progressive hero, and I don't hear a progressive today talking about getting us out of the wars the way Gene McCarthy stood up to Hubert Humphrey and LBJ and said, we got to get out of Vietnam. They said the same things that I'm hearing now from both the neocons and from so many progressives. We can't get out. We can't get out.
Yeah, Jack, I would add one other thing. My friend John Nichols, who writes for The Nation, tweeted out something this morning about no one, you know, really raising that they didn't have a question about climate change. And my response back was, or about the defense budget, which is this year going to be at $738 billion, billion with a B, dollars. In just three fiscal years ago, it was at $618 billion. That's a 20% increase at a time of peace in just 3 years, and you can't continue at this rate. And yet I have not seen that question come up at any of these debates, and that would go to the number of people who are overseas, our involvement everywhere in the world, and even the president. Think of the irony of him, his excuse for what his bad decision was in Syria, but then he's sending several thousand troops to Saudi Arabia. I mean, he doesn't even know how much he doesn't know when he does something like that. But you're right. None of those things were front and center as they should have been, and I hope and they will be in a future debate.
Well, and AT&T owns CNN, and AT&T has media partnerships in China and business partnerships, and there was not a single word about what's going on in Hong Kong, and there was not a single word about corporate power or, you know, breaking up giant monopolies, including media monopolies. So surprise,
yeah, we got a little antitrust, just a taste of it. You could do a whole debate that I think would be a valuable debate just on antitrust law.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at pharmaceutical companies and what they're doing, Big Ag and the devastation it's having in that upper Midwest, there's a lot we could talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot that we're missing. I've been saying, and in fact, I wrote about this yesterday, we need to bring back the League of Women Voters and get these TV stars out of the business.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was a poor debate as far as questioning.
Yeah, there you go. And they all have been. And the last time the League of Women Voters, they pulled out in 88. They said it's turning into a charade because the parties have taken it over. Anyhow, Alex in Seattle, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Congress. My question is a little bit different than everyone else's. What are your thoughts on the Democratic nominee, Andrew Yang, and how he's targeting the 18 to 24-year-old demographic by means of social media influencers, going onto podcasts, using avenues that no other Democratic nominees are doing with an undervalued demographic?
Yeah, Alex, I'll admit, I know the least about his candidacy probably than anyone. However, I can say two things. One, the fact that there are other strategies we should use to get political communication out there. He's clearly doing well enough because as someone who's come from nowhere to be in the debates, he's doing something right, and there should be something we can learn from that moving forward, and perhaps it's the policy issues, and perhaps it's the way he's communicating. However, I have seen the Monmouth poll that came out now probably about 4 to 6 weeks ago. He was at 6% among millennial or the younger voters, tie with Joe Biden, which was quite low on that poll. So I don't know, though, if his messaging is working exactly with that demographic, because at least from that poll, it didn't show the deliverables on maybe where he's advertising. But I do think we should look at the policy he's putting out there, and if he's doing something unique around political communication, we should always take the best practices that are out.
I'm curious your thoughts on the upcoming week and where we should be sending our attention and our activism.
Yeah, you know, we're back in session, so there's going to be a major prescription drug bill coming through the House in the next few weeks. If people are interested in that, they should be paying attention. We're going to be doing this resolution of disapproval on the president's actions in Syria and possibly some sanctions next week. And watch on the impeachment side, Ambassador Sondland, I think, could be very pivotal testimony coming up. I believe that's on Thursday. So just keep contacting your elected officials and let your voices be known. It's the single best way that we can actually be responsive. You need to be as active in this process.
There you go. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank there you go. Congressman Pocan, thank you again for another great week.
Of course, Tom. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yep,
thanks
great talking audience. With you. We will see you next week. We're very much looking forward to it. Congressman Mark Pocan, pocan.house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep. Mark Pocan. We're going to talk about the debate last night. It's going to get interesting. So would you like to watch the Tom Hartman program, all 3 hours of our program, anytime you'd like? Patreon.com, patreon.com/Tom Hartman, Tomhartmann, all run together. And you become a supporter of the program through Patreon. You have access to the full 3-hour show anytime you want and special content that we put up every single week that is unique specifically to our Patreon page. So check it out, patreon.com/Tom Hartman. Thank you. So let's check in with our old buddy Bob Ney and find out what's going on in the world today. Bob, first of all, welcome back from your meditation time with the Dalai Lama in India.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I thought about you as I walked past the Dalai Lama temple. I know you were over there, and it's a great place to be.
It really is. It's really amazing.
Isn't it?
It's like the epicenter of world peace.
Isn't it? Yes.
There's a few places where I really feel that way. I felt that way at the Dome of the Rock and on the Western Wall in Jerusalem.
Yes.
I felt
Absolutely.
That way at Machu Picchu. There's just a few places. I felt that way at the headquarters of the Salem International Group in Steinach, Germany, that these are like holy places, you know.
Aren't they?
Yeah. So anyway, what were your thoughts on the debate last night, and what do you think is the stuff that's happening in the news today that we really need to know about? But I'm particularly interested in your thoughts as a former Republican congressman from Ohio. You wrote a book, Sideswiped, about that experience. You know about politics.
Well, you know, Tom, I wanted to say, first off, Tulsi Gabbard, I loved the fact that she brought up about regime change wars.
Yeah.
I mean, that is what these are, make no bones about it, regime change wars. Saddam Hussein, you know, on and on, the pursuit of Assad. Nobody's saying whether these people are good people or bad people, but I just really appreciated, I think, hearing that. That lays out something nobody can dispute. So I just wanted, you know, to mention that.
But it went nowhere, which kind of surprised me.
Well, let me give you a generic overall, too. I'm sorry, but and I like what Cory Booker said about when they were starting down the road with Joe Biden. I like what he did. But I'm sorry, but these moderators of these debates, I noticed somebody would say something, and then they would turn around and say, well, Senator Warren, what do you think they just, you know, said about you? They wanted to foster combat last night.
Right.
That's exactly what they wanted to do. It's not your stereotypical debate. It's as if Republicans, in some cases, were sitting there asking the questions. Now, they're all big boys and girls. I understand all that, you know, the old political, you know, thing about, you know, you're coming to a fight. But after all, I think that people will look for a little bit more in a debate. So
this is
why
I've been saying bring back the League of Women Voters. You know, these people are, I'm tired of preening, you know, multimillionaire TV stars trying to get the perfect little soundbite that will elevate their career and increase profits for the network that doesn't do a damn thing for our democracy.
You hit the nail on the head, the League of Women Voters. They did it in 1980 when I first ran. They did it all over the country.
Yeah.
They need to come back.
Yeah,
they
quit in 88. They said that the parties were turning it into a charade, and they were right.
Mm-hmm. But overall, I mean, I think Elizabeth Warren did quite well. And I think also, you know, the fact that she was hit by the other candidates on certain issues and the way she defended herself, I think she showed last night that, you know, she's not just going to be answering, because some of my friends have said, well, should we answer like a professor against Donald Trump? I don't think. I think she'll answer factually, but I think she showed last night that, you know, she can handle, you know, when you come at her. Now, I know Trump will do it in a different manner, but I think she did did show that. And then Buttigieg was, I just think he really is quite amazing for a small town mayor from, you know, South Bend, Indiana, and the amount of money he's raised, et cetera. And he was a lot more sharp on last night, you know. Beto O'Rourke, I just don't
Beto's
don't see
fallen
it.
Away, yeah. No, I don't see it with him. I don't see it with Castro. Tom Steyer, he doesn't have a chance.
I think last night, Tom, as I sat and watched this, just, you know, watching from the outside, I was looking at combinations of tickets last night.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what I was doing. I was saying, oh, okay, this position, Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, talk about being able to hold her own. There is no question about that one, too. I know she has grown out of favor for some of her past prosecutorial stances. But then again, when I was, you know, was watching it, I was looking at the combinations. Because with this complete chaos, this nuclear bomb that has went off in D.C., and I think there's a lot of ugly things to come, I think Giuliani is in serious, serious trouble, big time, and some others. And I never thought I would say this. Please mark this day. John Bolton, who I love to politically beat up. John Bolton, think about this, who calls the staffer to say, well, you better get a hold of an attorney. I mean, really?
Yeah, well, John Bolton is the one reasonable guy in the room. You know, it's time to run!
That's what I was just thinking to myself. If I'm praising John Bolton, it's time to move on, too.
The three amigos. I mean, he's basically, you know, and it looks like Mick Mulvaney is the guy who made all this happen on behalf of Trump. Obviously, Trump made it all happen, but Mick Mulvaney was the bag man. And, you know, pushing State Department professionals out, pushing our ambassador out so that they could run this shakedown. Basically, of this neophyte president of Ukraine. I mean, it's just breathtaking, and Trump.
I'm sorry. Yes, it is breathtaking. And in the end, if the Senate does not convict, put that aside for a second. The House needs to do what the House is doing. Do it professionally. Do it appropriately. Keep it all on the up and up of how they do it.
Right.
And the president is creating a constitutional collision here, Tom, which eventually is going to get solved by a court. But it's a constitutional collision right now.
Yeah. Oh, and I think Trump is, I think his bet is he's got enough right-wingers on both the federal court, on the federal bench, and on the Supreme Court. And we saw this in this one case last week where this, one of three judges in the D.C. district, just basically echoed a meaningless Trump propaganda message as her decision. She had just been put on the bench by him.
The Senate is getting nervous. Trust me. The Senate ours are getting nervous.
Yeah, and I look forward to future conversations with you about that. Bob Ney, thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Bob Ney is the author of Sideswiped. The reason I've been using CBD oil for about a year now, and it is great stuff. New Leaf Natural CBD oil is the one that we're using right now. It's non-intoxicating CBD oil, which is great for people who want to use cannabinoids and get the health benefits from cannabinoids without getting high. CBD is non-toxic. It has potent pain-relieving and anti-inflammatory properties. And the brand that I use is New Leaf Naturals. New Leaf Naturals and New Leaf Naturals, the highest quality CBD oil on the market. It's 100% organic, highly concentrated, contains no additional additives, grown right here in the USA, and the only ingredient is hemp. So the product remains in its most pure and simple form and is totally legal. Go to newleafnaturals.com, that's NUleafNaturals.com. Save 30% off and get free shipping in the U.S. when you use the code TOM, spelled T-H-O-M. Go to NewLeaf, NewLeafNaturals.com for premium cannabinoid wellness. It's only one place, NewLeafNaturals.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here, right with you. Brian in Beverly Hills. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. Thank you. I called originally to bring up the endorsements of the ladies from the squad. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it right before the break, but I just wanted to get your take on how significant you think that actually is, because I feel like with those endorsements, they're going to bring in a lot of different groups of people from all around the nation to help Bernie. So I just wanted to know what you thought about that.
I don't know. I think it's a marvelous thing. As you know, I'm a big supporter of both Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. I will work for and vote for any Democrat who ends up being the standard bearer for our party. But those two, I will, I'm not doing endorsements this time around. I did last time. I endorsed Bernie and got, more. It wasn't a good thing. So this time I'm just gonna wait until we have a standard bearer. But I will express my preferences. The question is there so much overlap between the people who support the Squad? I've sent money to several of the Democratic candidates, including Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, and a few others because I wanted to get on their email list. I mean, I routinely do that in elections. But I also sent money to Ilhan Omar when Trump went after her. And so I'm on her email list. And I must have sent money to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez at one point because I'm on her list. And the question that you posed was, will their endorsement of Bernie really open up more support for Bernie? And I'm guessing that there's so much overlap between people who love Bernie and people who love the Squad that it's probably more affirming, an affirmation, rather than it is an alteration, something that's going to change the course of the race or anything like that. I think if they had gone for Elizabeth Warren, and it kind of surprised me because they're all women, had they gone for Elizabeth Warren, that might have been actually the beginning of a turning from Bernie to Elizabeth Warren. But instead, this is, a really good holding action because there are a number of people who are saying to themselves and saying in public and saying on this program, well, Bernie's got that baggage of the socialism thing, et cetera, and also he's got all these Democrats who worked for Hillary in the primary who just, hate him, and therefore he's got some problems inside the Democratic Party. There is some truth to that, but I think he can overcome all of that, frankly, if he's the party's nominee. He's a good guy, and he's very smart, and he knows what he's doing. But whether the Squad's endorsement is going to be consequential in a forward-moving way or whether it's simply going to hold off some of Warren's momentum is how I would frame that question. And I frankly don't know the answer to that. We'll have to see what happens.
I think that it's also maybe important to consider that they're women of color. It's not just that they're women.
Yes, you're right.
They're women of color. And I feel like that is a little bit more significant because I don't know whether, like what you said, whether there's actually an overlap already and that anybody that's already there is not going to be having to change their opinion. But I just still think the appearance of it is quite remarkable.
Yeah, I agree. So. I agree. It is. It's worth noting, certainly. Brian, thank you for the call. Jennifer in Stillwater, Minnesota.
Hi, Tom. I knew you'd get it eventually.
Yeah, there you go.
I just wanted to say, I'm a fifth generation Minnesota DFLer, and I voted for Amy Klobuchar the first time she ran, but then she delisted our wolves in our state.
What does that mean?
Does
it mean they can be hunted now?
Yes, they could be hunted, trapped, and snared. Our Minnesota DNR took a poll, and 79% of us did not want them hunted, and 90% did not want them trapped and snared. And then she did it anyway. She got them delisted. She sponsored the bill. It's a federal, thing.
Right.
And then they were hunted for 4 years. We formed a group called Howling for Wolves, and we fought her. We got petition signatures at the state fair and all over the state. And, she never listened to us. And we're all Democrats, of course, progressives. And so she was not responsive to us. And I think a lot of this had to do with, her support of big ag, big agriculture in our state.
Oh, because the wolves are eating the cows and stuff, you mean?
Well, theoretically, but really, the wolves mostly these days only live in the top, 20% of our state up by the Canadian border,
right.
And there's really not that much farming
and
up there.
And mostly they're competing
really
with deer hunters for deer, if they're competing with humans.
In our state, we have 1.2 million deer, and white-tailed deer are not native to Minnesota.
Yeah.
They moved up here after, And then also, I think it was actually connected to them wanting to get this copper-nickel mining, which we've never had in Minnesota before. It's very toxic, and there's an Oleg Deripaska connection there where he is in with Glencore Corporation, which was founded by Mark Rich, the financier.
So what does that have to do with delisting wolves?
Well, because the wolves were an endangered species, and you can't, it's like the spotted owl in Oregon back under Poppy Bush.
Right.
You can't have an endangered species like the Canada lynx or the wolves on the land.
Oh, so you can't build a toxic mine in the middle of a wolf preserve if wolves are listed.
Bingo.
If you delist the wolves, suddenly you can build your mine.
Bingo.
Oh,
and
God.
Bingo. And so they gave away 6,700 acres of our Superior National Forest to Glencore Polymet.
Right.
And that Superior National Forest is named after Lake Superior, the largest
sure.
body of fresh water on Earth, into which it's going to drain the copper sulfide, sulfuric acid. So Amy Klobuchar did that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay, Jennifer, thank you. I mean,
sure.
I need to fact check that. Just because you heard it on the radio from a caller doesn't mean it's true, but it sounds credible to me. Paul in Glenside, Pennsylvania. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I'd like to, if I can, hopefully improve the framing of the Medicare for All conversation.
Sure.
I think Elizabeth Warren certainly has the correct response when she says she's not going to sign a bill that will increase costs for the average American. And I think she needs to step back to counter the framing of the Republican talking points and just simply explaining it's a mixed economy. The economy as a whole has a public sector and it has a private sector. The public sector has taxes. The private sector has prices from its markets. Together, the prices and the taxes equal the costs of the economy.
Yeah, I was just
and
thinking.
She can step reframing.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the truck driver who called earlier, said I make $100,000 a year, and all you know, in my health insurance policy is part of the contract that I've got, and it's a gold plated policy. But I'm guessing that he's still got some out of pocket costs. It's probably still costing him a couple thousand bucks a year, particularly if he goes to a hospital or has any kind of even a small surgical procedure.
Well, he might never have been sick yet. He might never have been really sick.
Right.
He might
not know.
Or a broken arm. But
my point is that if he could have a couple thousand dollars a year in out of pocket expenses, and Medicare for All does away with all that, but his taxes go up $100 a month to cover it, he's still ahead. His costs are still lower.
And here's the other thing I think they need to elevate the entire discussion, to reframe it back to where it should be. This is the moral equivalent of war, and you're probably familiar with that term. Healthcare is not going to obliterate anything for Americans. It's going to protect everybody, just as the police department and the military protects the entire citizenry, the entire United States. Could you imagine if we were paying taxes and we're only going to protect Texas, Florida, California, and portions of the East Coast,
right.
That we happen to want to cover, and everyone else has to hire Pinkerton agents or whoever, Blackwater, to defend yourself? It's ridiculous. The moral equivalent of war is the concept that it is serious. As serious an issue as our health care is, the state should be defending our health as much as defends our lives from foreign invasion or criminality, the deadly criminals in our midst, in our communities. That's how serious health care is. It's the moral equivalent of war. And Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders need to convey that.
Yeah, and what part of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is still available to a person who is seriously ill and suddenly $100,000 in debt as a consequence
exactly.
of it. I mean, this goes back to that question.
We need to be free from the fear of foreign invasion. We need to be free from the fear of getting cancer. Free from
exactly,
the fear
and not just
happens.
For ourselves, for our neighbors too. Because your neighbor, what your neighbor gets,
sure.
might be contagious. I mean, you've got tuberculosis hotspots
exactly.
now in New York and Los Angeles. Walking down the street can be dangerous because everybody doesn't have health insurance, and it's just nuts. It's like it's like as if our fire department said, well, we're just not going to protect anybody who earns under $18,000 a year. Their houses will burn down. I mean, the Republicans are saying, well, your body will burn down if you make less than that because we're not going to give you Medicaid. It's nuts. I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you, Paul. I think, the moral equivalent of war. At first, I thought you said mall equivalent of war, and you were going to make a parallel about mall cops versus real cops, covering everybody versus. But then I figured out what you were saying, and I got it. I got it. And I'm with you.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Mary in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hey, Mary, what's on your mind?
Hi. I wanted to talk about the debate last night, and I think Bernie won. I think Elizabeth needs to really say that, yeah, we're going to raise taxes, or...
I think she needs to stay to her framing. That's a Republican frame, and it's really meaningless because it's as if it's all about taxes, and it's not. It's about costs.
Oh, I agree, but she's going to get hit hard.
This is going to happen over and over and over again, and she's going to keep saying, I will not raise the costs of average Americans. And she's going to repeat it enough times that people are going to start figuring out what the hell she's talking about.
Yeah, that's a good thing. But I do think Bernie won. I support Bernie, and I think AOC and the squad endorsing him is huge.
Yeah,
huge.
I agree.
You have a Muslim, you have a Hispanic and an African-American woman, and I think it's really going to give him a big boost. But my thing is, I called yesterday to talk about this. Tulsi was not going to debate because of what the DNC is doing in the primary states, which is polling instead of voting. Can you tell me what you know about that?
I don't know anything about it.
You don't know anything?
I have not been able to see. I mean, I've read several stories in which Tulsi Gabbard has made allegations about the DNC. I have yet to see an allegation that I understood what she was talking about. And that might be just that I'm uninformed. And if I am, you know, please inform me or somebody tweet me a link that'll make sense out of this for me. But
I have a link, and I have what she was talking about is basically she's hearing from the voters in Iowa, New Hampshire, Vegas, that they're going to poll and they're going to debate, but there will be no voting in the primary states. And I just wanted to know if that's even legal to do.
That's not true. Primary states are going to hold primary ballots. I mean, there are some that do it by caucus, you know, like Iowa does. So, yeah, you don't vote in Iowa. You show up at the caucus and hold your hand up. And then the other states hold elections. To the best of my knowledge, there are no states, primary states, that are not going to hold primary elections. Now, the Republicans are trying to do this. Trump has gotten four states now to say that they will not have Republican primaries in those states. But Democratic primaries are on. They're on all across the country. They have not been turned off anywhere. So I got a boogie, Mary, but I will fact check that this afternoon. I'll dig into it and see if I can find anything that contradicts what I just said. I like to be able to say that if I tell you something, you can take it to the bank. Let me double check that. But outside of Tulsi complaining, I have not seen any specific evidence of anything that what you just described. Anyhow, thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It really isn't. It requires all of us. And that includes you. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.